Welcome to the Custom Apparel Startups Podcast, your best source for information, news, tips, and tricks to get you off the ground running and earn success with your custom apparel decorating business. So get ready to soak up some knowledge. Now, here are your hosts, Mark and Mark.
Hey everyone, and welcome to episode 83 of the Custom Apparel Startups Podcast. My name is Mark Stevenson from Coldesi.
And this is Mark Vila from Coleman & Company. And today we've got insights from the apparel geek.
That's him.
Yes, right here. And for those of us just listening, not watching, Monty Mims. I'm actually really excited to have Monty on the show today. It could be the amount of coffee I drank this morning.
It could be.
But that helps.
It could be you just don't have to talk to just me for the next 45
yeah,
minutes.
That's a good portion of it. And we've wanted to connect with Monty on the show here now for almost a year. But, you know, Monty travels.
He's busy.
We've got a
He's
ton
busy.
Of
just in case on. You didn't yeah. know, in addition to being the apparel geek, which if you participate in the Custom Apparel Startups Facebook group, which you definitely should, then you've seen him give some great advice, some tips. Monty is also with Sanmar, who's our go-to apparel company, where we recommend and purchase blanks from, and is part of the Decorator Relations Group. So those are all reasons why we've got Monty on the show today.
Thank you all for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, awesome. So maybe why don't you give us like a, I don't know, just like a minute on Sanmar, Decorator Relations, what you do. I mean, make sure that the people understand that everything you say is really important.
Sure. Yeah, good. Yeah. I like that.
So to kind of build my validity card, I grew up in my dad's embroidery business, and he's a true old school guy for this industry. The idea of decorating apparel for business and even for retail isn't relatively that old. And he got started in the 70s doing retail transfer shops, had a chain of about six stores called Foxy's. If there's ever anything more 70s than that,
yes.
I don't know what that is.
I like
is.
That.
And moved from retail transfer business to business embroidery in 81. And so I was born in 77 amidst all of this and have been around it my whole life with, you know, Pellon on the floor and thread in my hair.
That's great.
And I was hired by Sanmar in 07, which was sort of an experiment for them because they had never hired a customer before. It had always been either folks from inside or other folks in the trade channel, reps with other companies.
Right.
So there was this question about, you've got this youngish guy, no outside sales experience whatsoever,
yep.
but has lived and breathed in his dad's business, appears to be like freakishly passionate about this stuff for some reason. What happens if we bring him in and sort of mold and shape him under our way? And 07 was a big time for us. But I left Tampa, Florida, where I currently live now, moved to Jacksonville, and took up a role as an outside sales rep, what we call territory manager. Did that for 9 years. And then, as you mentioned earlier, for the last 2.5 years, I've been part of a small group called Decorator Relations. And we're sort of tasked to be the brain trust of all things related to decorated apparel. Mm-hmm. And part of one of the fun things of my job is I get to connect and collaborate with companies like you all and learn from your folks and do what I can to share back my insights.
Yeah, awesome. And that's pretty much why if you go to the our brand websites, if you go to digitalheatfx.com or you go to dtgprintermachine.com, choosing the right t-shirt for the technology is a big deal.
Yeah.
And you'll see us, you know, when we test out shirts, we work with Sanmar on which shirts to test. You know, we work with their decorator relations team on recommendations, and you'll see like usually the top three or four shirts out of the five or six are all either a shirt sold by Sanmar or a specific brand that's a Sanmar
house
only brand.
House right. brand. Yeah. And one of the things that I get, people ask, you know, online, and they'll say, well, you know, why do you guys recommend Sanmar, you know, or I've seen some comments like, oh, it's got to be a money thing. You know, everyone's
yeah.
always connected
yeah.
to everything. But it's been, I think, for me at least, it's a philosophical thing that both companies, our goal is, I think, not our all of our goals, but one of the core statutes of both of our companies seems to be, if we help develop customers to be successful customers, then our customers will succeed in the industry, while our competition's customers will struggle more.
Correct.
Yeah. So it's about knowledge. It's about getting the right apparel, getting the right equipment, having knowledge and how to use it, and combining all those things together, building relationships with customers. So when we tried to develop relationships with other apparel companies many times, And it always fell through. It always turned into, it was always a money transaction of who's going to make more money.
Yeah. Not necessarily attentive. So that kind of goes back to, can you describe a little bit what exactly Decorator Relations is?
You know, it's a recently evolved group. The original genesis was with our channel manager, Mark Bailey, who kind of started this ball with really just exploring and building a network of contract decorators. Here in the last 3 to 4 years, though, we've had kind of stronger buy-in and resources from our ownership. And now, if you look at our landing page, the accounts that I visit are contract decorators, but our service channels are growing by the minute. Sanmar has an outside sales team that is one of the few that does not work on commission structure. So to your point, Mark, we really kind of take more of a sales through education approach, right? Mm-hmm. We want to go into a business, learn about who they're servicing, how they're servicing, and apply our product and our service offering to them to be successful. Sometimes that means stepping out of our Sanmar cozy box and saying, hey, we just don't have this, but here's somebody that does.
Right. Which I've seen you do that in the Facebook group.
I've done that, you know, in many ways and many times. And listen, we're all just, you know, kind of blessed or fortunate to work for a company that does believe in this philosophical approach, and love finding these strategic alignments with companies that feel the same way, because it's a longer term approach, right? We don't want to just capture an order today. We want to partner with somebody for the long haul.
Yeah. And so can you, just because we do have a lot of complete newbies here that listen to the podcast, what's a contract decorator?
So contract decorating has been around since the dawn of time. Again, my own dad started off as just an embroiderer, and his first commercial location was right next to a guy who did screen printing, had a small percentage of his business to in users or in consumers, mm-hmm. but frankly, didn't want to kind of fall into a lot of the time trappings that, you know, new end users can sometimes capture you on. And so he knew enough people that were selling through our trade channel that didn't own equipment or own just embroidery or just heat transfer, and said, I want to decorate for those guys. So a lot of contract decorators will have a kind of retail or direct price list, but they'll also have a wholesale price list at a discounted rate. Essentially, companies buy from a blank supplier like us, drop ship or bring to a contract decorator. They decorate it for wholesale rates, and then, you know, either ship it direct to the end user or back to the broker or fellow decorator.
Yeah. And this is kind of a really useful business model that we talk about pretty frequently.
Yep.
So, you know, if you, for example, let's say you buy the 1501C behind me, which I highly recommend, by the way. The Avance 1501C, let's say you are a home embroiderer, you want to start a business, you buy the 1501C and you start to get successful very fast. So that if you get a 500 piece order or 1,000 piece order or something like that, you will literally work yourself into the ground one shirt at a time. You know, so what you might do is you might find a contract decorator that has 7-6 heads and can do the same job in a day that would have taken you a month. And you'll still make money off the deal.
Yeah, and you make less money because you're paying someone to do labor for you, but that's the problem is turning away business that you could contract out.
Sure, right.
And there's plenty of people who are in this business, and they understand they sell it for a price knowing that it's going to be marked up.
Yeah, and it's also because, you know, the first time you say no to a customer is often the last time you ever hear from them.
Yeah.
Now, that's also a great circumstance, by the way, particularly with embroidery, is if you get more than one of those big deals and it's within the first year, then you know it's time to take advantage of the 100% trade-up guarantee. Trade in your Avance 1501C for a 6 head. You know, so yeah. you can do things mm-hmm. six times faster.
Is that your pitch? Your
that, this was my. I was on the edge of going. Today's episode is sponsored right. by the Avanza.
Right, okay.
But it works cross platform as well. Like you're saying, so I'm an embroiderer. I get a T-shirt printing.
Right, right. You know, and I think it's like anything. So much of the use of that network or that concept is just awareness it exists. We ourselves didn't know how big a scope that we could create with contract decorators.
Yeah.
So again, my channel manager Mark Bailey was tasked to do that 10 years ago. We're literally kind of celebrating our 10 years of this exploration.
Cool.
And 10 years later, our team as a whole, which literally went from one guy to a group internally and externally, manage about 700 contract decorators nationwide.
Wow.
So I myself don't know what number I would have put on that, but maybe I have never have guessed something that big.
Yeah.
And these businesses that are in our database and in our network, you know, are fully vetted. We do site visits. You know, 50% or more of their business has to be in contract decorating services. Since I joined the team in talking to a lot of these guys, I'm trying to get their kind of customer-facing websites to speak more to that language,
yep.
to kind of own their statements and not just tell us they do it. But we capture a lot of good data points on each decorator. So when someone does come to us and say, not just I need an embroiderer for 500 pieces,
right?
But you know, I need somebody to do puff or dye sublimation or something tricky. Right. Or even if it's screen printing, because we've got so many people in our database, we're sort of starting to push back with our information and say, if I send you every contract screen printer in the state of Florida, that's going to be 50 names maybe.
Yeah.
Help me boil that down. Let's get pinpoint by location, pinpoint by technique, and equip you all with a good partner.
So I think, and then maybe a piece of advice would be to set up contract decorators and be prepared now.
Right.
So when you have the order,
you're
not scrambling, right? And how would somebody take the first step to be able to do that?
So you can email us directly. Our team has a joint email address, decoratorrelations@sanmar.com.
Okay.
And that's a universal inbox, you know, looked at by three or four different people throughout the day. So, you know, should have pretty good quick response time. But to my earlier point, you know, pinpoint specificity. Let's find you a contract embroiderer who does hats.
Okay.
You know, that's one of the most common ones is I've got a single head. Heck, I've even got eight heads, baby.
Yeah.
That's what my dad and I, when I was working with my dad actively, I think at our peak, we had only 11 or 12 heads of embroidery. Well, if we had a 300 piece hat job come in, again, we wanted to run flats. Those were more profitable pieces.
Right. Mm-hmm. They're faster.
Send the hats to these guys who have 200 heads and they've got 20 or 40 just for hats.
I like that.
So those kind of levels of specifics can help us pinpoint. And the other thing that's important on this topic is you want to build a network, right? So again, my dad's been doing this 30 plus years. He still just does embroidery. He's got a forehead crammed in his garage now, enjoying his twilight years.
Yeah.
But he's got the small home-based printer who's really technical and artistic. He's got the big kind of low-cost printer. And he's even got two or three contract embroiderers where he still farms out goods. So you don't just want to have the one guy. You want to kind of build up a network, and we can certainly help with that.
Yeah. So it's great to be specific then, as you said. So when if you're listening to this now and you're thinking, I should be growing my business this way, you should probably write down what are some specific things you know you can sell to your customers you're going to run into.
Right.
Like you said, embroidered caps or whatever it might be.
Yeah. So. Have you had to say no recently?
Right.
Yeah, whether it's for turnaround time or specific technique.
Yep.
But honestly, like the way we and a lot of our customers interact with Sanmar isn't through the contract decorators.
Sure.
It's actually just to soak up that free advice.
Yeah.
So here's the thing is, and it sounds like a commercial for jointly sponsored by Sanmar and this, and I'm gonna ask you about the Apparel Geek in just a second.
Sure.
But you know, it's this ability to call somebody that knows stuff.
Yeah.
You know, when you call most blanks distributors or I mean even equipment salespeople,
sure.
You know, what you get is you know, I sell white styrofoam cups.
Yeah.
I can tell you anything about this cup that you want to know.
Sure.
You know, it's not like, hey, I've got this problem or I'm doing this technique or this is my first time doing this. You know, do you have either a person you can recommend help?
Right.
Or what blank should I use?
Sure. Yep.
And honestly, like we take all the seasonal And the niche market brochures that you guys send out. We just rip everything off of there that we can. We're
free
just
to
like,
do so.
I mean, you can see behind us, this is a Sanmar display.
This is awesome. Kind of.
Yeah.
The apparel's all Sanmar.
Yes. Sure.
And the idea was we received some Sanmar brochures, catalogs, whatever they were.
Right.
And they had some sections built in that were all color coded and nice.
Really
and
well organized.
We said our showroom needs to look like that with color codes, color coded and stuff like that. So this one's kind of your, you've got the green, black, and white section.
Yes.
We've got all different types of apparel being decorated on this, and we're going to be doing our whole showroom like that.
Yes.
And I think Sanmar encourages. You actually give instructions to your customers on these pieces
how
that I get.
How to build a retail space.
Say we went to IKEA.
Again, it goes back to the earlier point of, you know, we're heavily weighted in a sales by education approach, right?
Yeah.
And so we have a whole website, SanmarU, that really was an internal site and system and process that we had for training our employees. And year after year after year, we would send customer surveys out. And one of the most common things we would hear back from our customers was, I just hired a new sales rep. Where do I send them to get training, right?
Yeah.
I just got into the industry. Any machination of that story would come to us. And we'd go, well, you know, go to look at YouTube or attend a trade show, anything.
Yeah.
But it was so convoluted, right? So we sort of took that collected voice feedback and said, let's build a site system devoted towards education. And this ties into the collaboration with companies like you all, right? So you all are selling equipment to these customers. They're mutual customers of ours.
Mm-hmm.
You all have excellent insights and knowledge about the decoration process. We know our apparel very well. How can we collaborate? How can we get some training videos from you all and share back, you know, respectfully?
Yep. Yeah, I like that. So what does the Apparel Geek do?
You know, the Apparel Geek sort of social media concept started for me about 5 years ago. I was still a territory manager at Sanmar. To everything we've already been discussing, I was getting these incredible insights and ideas from our sales team, from sales meetings, from customers, and I wanted the ability to share that back to certain customers. Not everybody is passionately interested and cares as much as maybe I do, but as I was doing site visits with my accounts, I would go see somebody, and during my product presentation, I would reference like an end-user experience, or here's a technique that maybe they hadn't thought of doing. I remember we came out with a varsity jacket. It was a sweatshirt varsity jacket look.
Yeah.
Still in the industry, still a hot design. But to show that thing blank was kind of eh. But to kind of visualize the creativity that you could do with that was another step, right? So I wanted to be able to capture those inspiration moments and share them with my customers. And I thought about ways to do that. And admittedly, at 40, I was on Facebook, kind of on Instagram. I hadn't really embraced social media, maybe to some degree that I should have. And so I started up a Twitter and then an Instagram and then eventually Facebook. Most of it's all through Apparel Geek.
Right.
And it literally is just a sharing kind of inspiration portal for me.
Okay.
I get to travel around the country. I get to do different things, see really cool things. And of course, if I'm in a customer shop, and they have a neat piece, I'll ask permission, of course. Can I take a picture?
Yeah.
Can I share this back? There's some folks out there looking for that.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, no, I love that. I would love to ask the Apparel Geek some questions.
Fire away.
Okay,
let's
so
do this.
This is the one that drives me insane. And this is actually
only
why
one. I'm impressed.
This is the one why once I've had like a beer or two, I won't go on social media.
Right.
Thank you. I
but
appreciate that.
Is that Mark loves it, I'm sure. But no, this is what it is that somebody classic. They design a shirt, they print it out or transfer it or whatever they're doing, and they do it. They wash it or they wear it once and it looks destroyed.
Right.
Right. And my machine is messed up. My paper is bad. I've got a bad batch of thread.
Sure.
My ink must be funky, whatever
yeah.
it is. And it's almost always the apparel, I feel.
Sure.
Because
sure.
they chose the wrong apparel. So
right.
I guess, how does a customer pick the right apparel? And when do you think it might, what are maybe some signs that you realize that they chose the wrong piece of apparel? Sure. I don't know. Just throw some education on why the shirt they pick is so important for the decorated.
And I'll unpack a few things with that answer. One, again, our team is doing something in the last, call it year and a half, that, again, is uncharted territory. When someone gets a product from us and does a decoration application to it and has some degree of failure or issue, our team is now also responding with a kind of a troubleshooting solution there. We're trying to break free from the chains of, you know, we're the apparel guy, blame the ink supplier. Yeah. We're the ink supplier, blame the apparel guy. Right. And the customer, or gosh forbid, contract decorator and broker right. are all caught in the middle of this storm. So that's another thing that our team is doing. Another callback to decoratorrelations@sanmar.com is, I've bought a Sanmar polo, I'm having embroidery problems, there's holes, there's separation, what's going on? The team that I'm a part of collectively has 80 years of experience in decorating apparel. But more important than that, we're actually connected to a broader network of guys like yeah. you, other folks that do trade show teaching seminars, contributing writers throughout the industry. And we lean on those resource connections to say, we're having a problem with this garment and this decoration. What can you do to help us fix it? And we'll get down to the analyzing the digitized file, testing nice. Samples. So part of the answer for that is, if you're having problems with something where it's a garment, it's been decorated, and something isn't lining up, you can definitely lean on our team and in Sanmar for support
yeah,
there.
Okay.
I think the other part of your question is, how do I start off with the right garment to begin
yeah,
with?
Yeah, and right? that's kind of a big portion of it is
sure.
you're doing sublimation
yeah.
and you chose a cotton
black
t-shirt.
Cotton.
Yeah.
Black you know, cotton, why does it look bad?
Yeah, sure. It won't
yeah.
work.
Yeah.
Or sometimes it will, it seems like it should work.
Sure.
I got a really light gray, and I'm going to put sublimation on it.
Right.
But the dye or the pigment that's in the garment
yep.
is really terrible for
sure.
sublimation.
Yep.
Even though it's 100% polyester.
Right.
So, yeah. So how do you...
You know, I would say, again, it leans back on companies that have some sort of advisory educational approach with their customer base. They don't want to just sell you a piece of equipment and, you know, don't support it after that. And so I think, again, that's why we found ourselves in a good strategic alignment is someone buys, you know, an Oki printer from you, a heat press from you all there for advisory support later on. Same thing with Sanmar. They buy your equipment, they buy our product. We're there to kind of support them when they run into those curveballs. We hope to catch them beforehand, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, back to our Sanmar University site, you know, that's a portal now and a section where you can go read about dye sublimation, what it works on, what it doesn't work on.
Right.
So the real, you know, goal here is to try to get the education up to speed as quickly as possible before you start, you know, selling stuff that isn't going to fit. We know that's not 100% realistic.
Yeah.
So I think it's important to realize there's companies like Sanmar, companies like you all that can be there when, you know, the wires get crossed.
So do you guys have, because I know that we tested shirts for DTG
yeah. yep.
Specifically and for white toner printing
yep.
specifically, is do you keep a list of, so if somebody does have a problem
right.
With or without something that they purchased from Sanmar, let's
sure.
say it's sublimation or white toner printing, do you have a list of, well, that's a shirt that we haven't tested. It's not made of the same things.
Sure.
It's not treated the same way.
Yeah.
That's your problem.
Yeah. Dye sublimation is a really a specific technique that it can be easy to call out right there. I do a lot of shows and we get a lot of new people coming in and they've just been educated on dye sub and they're excited and they say, hey, can this be dye sublimated? Maybe it's a polyester fleece hoodie.
Yeah.
And I always like to respond the same way. Technically, probably.
Yeah.
It's kind
yeah.
of my common answer. It is 100% polyester, and I know you just learned that polyester
yeah.
equals successful dye sub, but hopefully the good educators in that room also sort of talked about some of the nuances. And for me personally, anything heat applied starts to get real sticky really quick.
Yeah.
I don't know your equipment. I don't know your background. I
yeah.
don't know your experience. I don't know what sort of pads, coating, silicone, Teflon sheets you're using.
Yeah.
So can this be done? Yes. With the right skills, with the right equipment, with the right dial-in. So anything heat applied, whether it's heat transfer vinyl or dye sub, I immediately get a little tippy-toe about,
yeah.
technically that polyester hoodie can be done. It wasn't designed for dye sub, and I think
right.
that maybe
oh,
is more
okay.
specific
yeah.
to
yeah.
what you're saying. We only have a couple pieces in our catalog or on our website that were technically engineered for dye sublimation, meaning the yarns are tolerant up to those 400
yeah.
degrees levels. Other than that, people love to do die sub on our sport tech pieces, ST350s and so forth. Can it be done? Yes. You might have to tweak some stuff to avoid press lines. Absolutely. Yeah. Can you get some sheen change? Certainly. So we have to be very cautious and calculated of saying, this was made for die sub. This can be done with some technique.
And we run into that more frequently because, on our side with the Digital Heat FX line, we're just starting to offer die sublimation options.
Yeah.
So we're going to get deep into that. But even on direct-to-garment printing, which is now, it's a 10-12-year-old technology, even today we get customers that they'll try to print on a tri-blend.
Right.
And on this tri-blend, prints beautifully, works great, washes, looks bright. On this tri-blend, all the numbers are the same.
Right.
It doesn't wash well.
Sure.
It's just, it gets really science-y.
It does.
That's really what I want to say. It's really science-y.
It's why, so when we decided we were going to try, and I have to emphasize the word try and own, because we're certainly far from perfection at this point, helping with these decoration challenges. Your example is a perfect one.
Yeah.
Two tri-blends, 50, 25, 25. One DTG is great. I'm having awesome success. The other one theoretically should be having the same results. It doesn't, right?
Right.
So when we take these challenges in, we do have to analyze them and get pretty specific.
Yeah.
We just finished, and this was long overdue, we just got a jot form built that categorizes all 8 major techniques and drills down into some very specific questions. So if you come to us with a DTG problem, say on our tri-blend, we've got to get a lot more pertinent information out of you, down to your press, down to your heat, all the other variables that come into play there. If they're a willing dance partner, if they're going to give us the information, and we'll get, as you put it, science-y with us, we can analyze those variables and see what, if anything, could be changed. And sometimes the result is, it's just not the right shirt.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And I mean, like I know to Mark's point, that in the Facebook group and in customers that call in, I'm not going to say it's 90%, but a huge amount of the issues that customers experience with a variety of different decorating technology is the shirt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It really is.
Some of it's like, and it's just like you can go on and on about it, but some of it is they got the shirt from, perfect example here. I made some shirts a few weeks ago.
Sure.
So, and I wasn't, it was very short time. It was like the night before we talked about it. So my friend said, I'm going to stop. I got a couple shirts I'll drop off to you and you bring them to work and we're going to Disney the next day. So they come by and I, as soon as I felt it, I'm like, what'd you do to your shirt?
Uh-oh.
And it's like, I washed it. And I'm like, this thing is covered in fabric softener. I can feel it.
Oh.
I was like, this is going to
not work.
Yes. I was like, I will get it to stick for tomorrow.
Yeah. Right.
This is That's it.
We're going to temporary tattoo status now. Right.
And so it's like, you've got that. You've got the...
just the wrong medium with the wrong garment.
Yeah, the wrong medium with the wrong garment. And there's a lot of, if you consider, like I compare it to like, cooking, baking, like if somebody buys like premium grade sugar, premium grade flour, Ghirardelli chocolate, or they get all the ingredients and make chocolate chip cookies, versus somebody bought the cheapest of everything, baked it in the same oven, there's a flavor difference
there is.
And if you've got if you go and you try to find the cheapest possible shirt and don't regard if it's good for what you're doing, your apparel decorating method, your apparel decorating method, then you're going to have failure on that.
To that point, Mark, I would add, I would specify much more like baking, and I don't cook or bake. I just learned a lot from my wife. That's extremely specific, right?
Yeah.
If you vary some of those temperature, time details, even just a little bit, all of a sudden you got cookie mush everywhere.
Yeah.
So I'd say, a lot of these, again, specifically heat applied things, screen printing, you have a little bit of variables that you can have some slight adjustment to, but most people don't necessarily take that ingredients list or that, cooking instruction or baking instruction as seriously, or they've been doing it a while. They get kind of lazy, complacent, and comfortable. Hey, just throw it on the press. We'll wrap it out real quick. Is it calibrated? No. Did you warm it up? Not really, but it'll do fine, right?
Yeah.
And it's okay for a, one-time use trip to Disney.
Yeah.
Not okay for long-term results.
Right. Yeah, and there's so many things within that you mentioned. We just did a video on calibrating heat press. Okay, so I would be surprised if anybody listening to this right now did the calibration on their heat press within a week.
I would bet.
We got a brand new heat press in here, and it's a great product. We love it. And we were like, let's show how to use this tool. Mm-hmm. Right, so I call Michael in here and I say, you know how to use this tool, will you do a video for me? And he says sure. He pops it on there, brand new heat press, 10 days old, right. 10 degrees off.
Oh wow.
Wow.
And it's just a thing. Yeah, it happens. Yeah. Right, I mean, it was shipped, it was in a warehouse, who knows why, but it was 10 degrees off. Sure. Now that's fine for when we do most of the things that we were doing.
Right.
But if you get down to, you know, you're trying to do a specific polyester shirt and you're doing a white toner transfer and you're bringing the temp all the way down to the minimum, it will stick.
Yeah.
Yep.
Now that 10 degrees is the difference between it sticking or not.
Ugh. Yeah. It's the same in DTG. You know, we're getting shorter and shorter cure times on DTG through, you know, ink science and things like that. And the shorter that cure time goes, the finer the window of,
margin of error.
The margin of error gets really small for temperature and pressure.
Absolutely.
So yeah, that's a good level.
There's just so many things. And so when somebody is they're starting with like a new apparel decorating method,
sure.
And they really love a bunch of shirts that they used before.
Right.
All right. And they've sold these to their customers, but now they have to choose a different shirt. Do you maybe have any advice on how they approach their customers to say, because they have to tell them, if I give you the same shirt, you're not going to like it as much. Do you have any advice or things you're...
You know, I learned from my dad in the sales approach back then, and I've had that kind of educational refinement since working with Sanmar. One of the things I learned early on with my dad's business is we would constantly have end users come in, and they would say, I work as a landscaping company. Here's the shirts we've been getting. Can you quote me on this? Can you get, you know, write me up for this shirt, right? Mm-hmm. And it's very easy. And I would say 95% of the time when someone walks in your shop with that story, you just go, sure, let me get the stunner, write it down, and how many pieces, and same art as before. Okay, cool. The problem with that approach is you're making your entire sales strategy based on the last guy that customer was dealing with, right? Yeah. They maybe helped them decide what the right product was. They created the art. They did that. But guess what? That guy's in your shop now, right? He's not in the previous guy's business. So unless you're dealing with a company who just is getting started, this is their first wave of apparel, if you just say, sure, no problem, I'll get you a price really quickly, you're reliant on that guy's sales approach versus, well, tell me what you do. Tell me who's using these shirts. Right. What do you like about the shirt? What do you not like about the shirt? Inevitably, if you ask 4, 5, 6 key questions like that, you're going to quickly discover, well, you know, now that you mention it, how many times have we heard that, right? Mm-hmm. You're never going to say it. It's not what was in their mind walking in the door. But as soon as you start asking questions, now that you mention it, we got this guy, Tony, he's like 7'3". Don't come in tall options. It's sleeves are up to here. So you start to uncover a couple of things they don't like. Well, you turn that kind of reactive, responsive approach into an actual proactive sales approach. You've got a customer for life. A guy's going to be coming back to you next time, not the next guy.
And you've also broken out, and that's great, you've also broken out of the $10 shirt range.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You know you could get a name brand?
You're no longer competing with that same guy.
Yep. You're absolutely like right.
And the big challenge that you see is that they believe if they say no to this garment, that they're going to lose the business.
Right.
But here's the simple fact.
Right.
Why are they talking to you
in
the first place?
Yeah.
Why didn't they just go back to that other shop?
Yep.
They messed up. They went out of business. They were overpriced. They moved. Yep. I mean, there's a reason why they're talking to you. It's different when you're outbound trying to get business from somebody else.
Yeah.
But that's where it comes down to the questions.
Yep.
You build value by just asking.
And you don't know if you're the third guy he's talked to that day or the first. But what you can bet on, and this is just my perspective and experience talking, is the other two guys said, sure, let's see, I write that style number down. Yeah, here, can I email you? Can I get your email? And they're just sending a reactive email back. My dad continues to get new business this way because he's a very knowledgeable guy. He likes to chat a little bit. And when he gets a cold call lead through his site, through somebody who knows somebody, he doesn't just take that approach where he's like, sure, I'll quote you on what you got last time.
Yeah.
Starts to dig in, ask a few questions, And next thing you know, again, he's not only found a solution, but he's got a customer for life.
Hey, that's the difference in the way our companies do business as well.
Sure.
Right? So if you are interested in an embroidery machine or a white toner printer or a DTG printer, if you come to us looking for the, hey, this is what I want to do, you know, what's the, I got a quote from this company online,
right,
or, you know, I this is the price that I want to pay for it or something like that. You're not going to get the answer that you're looking for from us.
Sure.
You're going to get that conversation about, well, you know, I mean, why are you looking at this piece of equipment?
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. What are you going to be doing with it? What kind of, are you a startup? Are you going to need training?
Right.
Do you need support? Are you a pro?
Right.
You know,
what's your marketplace?
Yeah. Do you have a niche market yet?
Right.
You know, you're going to get all of that. And, you know, there's a value to that, and you'll end up being happier and as a customer of ours, and you can pass that same idea on to your customers.
Absolutely.
The more you get into their business,
right,
the more successful you're going to be.
And this is a trap that business owners fall into, sales people fall into. They say, I don't want to probe too much. I don't want to be the type of person who seems like I'm always trying to upsell to somebody.
Right, yeah. Right, yeah.
And I said, okay, well, here, this is the answer. Are you trying to always upsell to them? Is that your only goal?
Right.
Because, I just want to make sure that I'm giving them the right thing. Well, then you're not.
Right. Yeah.
And if they think that, once you start doing it enough, you'll realize that every once in a while we go, oh, what are you going to do with it?
Right.
What's it matter to you?
Yeah.
And we say, because if I sell you this one,
right, it's absolutely true.
If I sell you this one and you don't like it, then you're really going to be upset at me.
Yes.
So it's just a conversation we're having.
This is a, you know, it's a weird thing to say this out loud, and you know, the SAMR folks might not like this, but while I enjoy, you know, advising and helping people find solutions in our company, I almost derive a bit more enjoyment because I have the freedom to say, hey, listen, we have this piece. It's not really made for dye sublimation, but here's a company who does make product for dye sublimation. So it's often for myself personally, being able to help somebody, even when it's outside, you know, your direct wheelhouse.
See?
Again, I've got customer retention in spades and longer
term
strategy.
I've been trying not to bring this up, but I can't because every Christmas we have a tradition with my daughter, who's, even though she's 25 now and married, every Christmas, somewhere around Christmas Eve, we watch Miracle on 34th Street.
Of course, yeah.
And the whole point of the show is Santa Claus sitting in the middle of Macy's, basically, and sending people to where they can find the toys cheaper.
Yeah.
Or the toys that are
very
unavailable.
Good.
It's the same thing. So congratulations on being Santa Claus.
You know, I did play him a few times as a child, but that, I didn't want to get into that today. It's the trusted advisor approach, right? That's ultimately what SAMR wants from our sales team, frankly, from all employees externally and internally, is to say, hey, listen, let me help you be successful.
Yeah.
The more that I can help you be successful, the more successful your business will be. And when I don't want to just sell you a product for today. I want to continue to work with you, drive your sales up for the next 5, 10, 15 years.
And this is the approach that, you know, like you listening to this, like you've got to take this when you're talking to somebody, when they approach you, like, because every day it's a fuzzy picture of a shirt. Where can I get this shirt? And that's fine, but for often enough, you've really got to dive into that approach. And also, just like, I know that the person is tied to that shirt. However, like, this shirt is not their dog or their cat or their child.
Right, right.
They are really not that in love with this shirt.
It's not a car purchase.
Yes. Right.
That's a big deal.
They liked it.
Right.
And
they
believe they would like it again.
Yeah.
Sure.
Or they got a shirt from Company A and it was bad.
Right.
Because that person did nothing. They just bought the cheapest shirt and decorated it the cheapest way, and they hated it. So then they go to Company B, and that company just asked some questions and got it right.
Yeah.
So they think the best solution is to duplicate that with you, but they're not going back to Company B. Remember that.
Right.
Always remember that.
Yeah.
So now this is, you just say, you just take maybe the last person they went to did take the right approach.
And
you do it too for you though.
I understand those pictures that they post where, you know, I'm looking for socks with a zipper all the way around.
Yeah,
you know, I mean,
right.
I understand stuff like that.
Yeah,
but if it's something maybe like marginally unique or it's just a particular brand or
V-neck tri-blend.
Yeah.
If
it's a particular color, then I guarantee that you're not charging them for the research it's taking you to find that shirt.
Right, right, yeah.
And set up a relationship with that vendor.
Sure.
I see that in hats all the time.
Yeah.
I've got to have a Richardson 112 hat.
Right, right.
I've got an order for 8.
Yeah.
You know
yeah.
what I mean? Does anybody know a wholesaler?
Right.
No. You know what? The guy that I buy my shirts from has this hat. Looks a lot like that.
Right.
What do you think?
Yeah.
You know, I mean.
And another question I had is about colors.
Sure.
Okay, so. This is something maybe you could draw some education
sure.
on. But I remember when I was first getting into this industry, I was making a handful of shirts. I think it was just for some friends. And I don't remember what it was. But we had like 3 different colors.
Right.
So blue, awesome. You know, green, awesome. Red, just the colors were bleeding on it.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
it was like, and we're like, what happened?
Right, right.
You know, and then I've noticed it, you know, throughout the years that sometimes you get a particular color that the decorated method seems to fail in.
Sure,
why is that?
So there's different dye stuffs in certain colors, and red, it's, you know, probably there's a reason it's associated with the devil, right?
Yeah.
It's such a terrible color in so many ways, especially for decorating. So, you know, with the advent and rise of polyester in the last, you know, 15 years, red, black, dark, these dark colors, these deeply saturated colors, we're challenged with dye migration, right? And it's heavily affected with anything heat related. So it affects heat transfer vinyl. It definitely affects screen printing. One of the reasons I love SAMR is because we do have that, not just education or approach of saying, here's what we know, but we also bring in the collected voices or feedback from our customers' problems. So we were really the first company to take the dye migration problem head on. We already had a pretty strong selling polyester series under our ST350 Sport Tech line.
Mm-hmm.
But about 6 years ago, we decided to go from a standard dye process with our polyester to what's called a cationically dyed process. And it was a deeper, more heat tolerant setting of the dyes. And the cationic dye process had been in the industry for a little bit in a little way. But because the supply had not built up, the cost was very high. Well, we took our best seller and said, listen, because we are the company we are, we're going to invest in that like better suited technology. We're going to be able to buy it at scale to keep the cost relatively low, not change our pricing, but ultimately provide a solution to the industry.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
6 years later, I think if you search PosiCharge or cationic on our website, we've got well over 100 styles that you can decorate in those mediums without bleeding and dye migration. Similar story goes with snagging. Picking and snagging on polyester shirts was a thorn in everybody's side for many years. Snag-resistant, snag-proof technology prevailed, and it came from listening to your customers' challenges.
Hey, listen, I think the best way to decorate anything red is embroider it.
I really do.
But so just to kind of break this, kind of de-geekify this a little bit.
Sure.
So the problem with, there's problems with polyester for a couple of reasons. And if you think about it in layman's terms, polyester is basic. You can think about it as a plastic.
Sure.
It's almost like a plastic material. What happens when you heat up plastic? If you put plastic in the oven, if you put it in the microwave, if you put it in a heat press, the shape of it changes, the color of it changes. It basically melts.
Right.
So whenever you apply anything to a polyester shirt, especially temperature and pressure from a heat press, it can change the color.
Yep.
The dyes that the various printing technologies use changes. It changes color.
Right.
It interacts with the plastic differently.
You have wavy lines.
Yeah.
Lots of weird stuff.
It's weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
And it's just like there's microwave safe bowls made of plastic.
Sure.
And there's none.
Yeah.
It's the same with the apparel. Is that there's apparel that you've just mentioned.
Right.
The dyeing process, the apparel itself is designed for heat and pressure.
Yep.
And there's ones that are not.
Right.
That doesn't mean the bowl that doesn't say microwave safe won't be safe to melt butter for 10 seconds. It might be fine.
Sure.
Just like you can take a shirt that's not necessarily designed for this, but you could put a silicone sheet on top of it and work around with it, and it sticks and it washes well. But you're I compare this a lot to often in my head to baking and sure. to cooking because yeah. I love to cook. I love to bake. It's one of my hobbies, and I notice it's all the time. So you can take that same batch of cookies. Yep. You could cook them at 400 degrees for 15 minutes. You can
right.
cook them at 425 for 12 minutes.
Sure.
You know, so the same thing happens yeah. with a heat applied.
Yeah.
And it's just something that there's not one answer
sure.
to how to bake a cake. There's an infinite,
right.
almost. There's billions of answers.
Yeah. Well, to kind of tie a ribbon about this subject, you know, so much of what is affecting our industry is coming, most all of it stems from retail. You know, I've seen this from yeah. the earliest days where, you know, the Polo lines that companies like us were carrying heavily weighted, if not brand specific, to what was happening in the golf industry, right? So we are living in the golden age of polysynthetic materials.
Yep.
You have moisture wicking fabrics and performance everywhere. Fabrics everywhere. I think back 15 years ago and walking into a Target store, how they had maybe a couple of racks of like workout apparel.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Now it's like half the department's devoted to, yeah. you know, poly spandex.
Athleisure.
Tri-blends, arguably the biggest thing happening in our industry right now. If I could show you the sales on a chart, it would just be a straight line going up.
Right.
And again, heavily polyester, rayon, even more mm-hmm. heat sensitive yeah. than polyester in many ways, a little bit of cotton. So here's what happened. Starts at retail, affects our business. People are demanding it. They've got a retail shirt. They love it. They love the way the shirt feels. They love the way the design's done. Well, now our two companies are now tasked to source and suss out how do we get that yeah. shirt to work with your equipment and how does your equipment work on which shirt? So again, it kind of ties together everything we've been talking about, which is, you know, the collaboration efforts between blank wholesale apparel vendors and the people that sell equipment yeah. are going to be good allies mm-hmm. in helping customers find solutions.
Yeah, and that's really something that you have to impress upon your customers when they come into your shop too, with that example.
Sure.
You know, like they have a $200 pair of tights from Lululemon.
Yeah.
You know, they've got something from a specialty store that they really love.
Sure.
There are a couple of stores that are great because the brand is just basically a small vinyl logo.
Right.
Bring those all day long.
Right.
But you know, they'll bring mm-hmm. you something and they'll say, like, I really want this.
This look, this
and
feel.
This is yep. and this is where you have to go, like, not on that shirt.
Sure.
You know, these guys are the manufacturers. They do this before they even sew the shirt together.
Yeah.
You know, it's done in a specialized factory, but here's what I can do.
I used to tell people all the time, and it's, I'll take a little page up TLC, don't go chasing, instead of waterfalls, unicorns, right?
Yeah.
Customers would come in all the time and they would want things that just aren't feasible.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
just said a key thing there, which is, you know, so much of what's in retail is done at these pre-production factory levels, where they've, you know, embellished the hat before it's been even constructed.
Yeah.
And I can get close, you know, with the materials and the equipment I have, but it's just not something I can reproduce. And
yeah.
and I've seen too many people waste too much time going down the rabbit hole looking for something that just simply is a unicorn, not meant to happen.
Yeah, right. I know there's a good example behind me, so I'm just going to reach back here.
Yeah, this sure. has caught my eye since I walked in the room.
So here,
that would have been a unicorn for
yeah,
me.
Yeah, yeah. So here's the deal. I am holding up a retail sneaker. We bought yeah. the cheapest white one that we could find.
Sure.
But we've got an embroidered design
and
on
hold
it.
Hold it a little higher.
A little
yeah,
higher.
There we go.
So we've got an embroidered design on it that's just awesome. Well, you know, someone, you know, people like All Over Printing.
Yep.
When I was up at Plymouth State University, one of our clients up in New Hampshire last week, and they, you know, one of the students was wearing something that had rhinestones on the side and had embroidery around the toe. And there's a lot of this kind of throwback embroidery on shoes going on as
sure.
well.
Sure.
99% of that is done before the shoe was assembled.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You can see, like, this is, you know, 5 years ago even, you would not be able to put this on an embroidery machine and change it. You'd have to do it before it was stitched.
Right.
Right? But now, you know, with something like the embroidery grip and a little ingenuity from the folks at Coleman & Company, you can actually decorate a sneaker.
Yeah.
But if someone comes in with this hugely decorated sneaker yeah. and says, I'd like you to do this.
Sure.
I can't do that.
Yeah, you know, but be the expert.
Yeah, right. But here's what I can do. I can do something like this. You know,
sure.
let's be a little tasteful. Let's customize it. We'll put this on it or that on it. And you can do this now. You can embroider on sneakers now. You just can't do it like, you know, Tom's does, yeah, you know, sure, before it's assembled.
Yeah, I think that this is something that Monty, you could probably give us some good education on.
Sure.
Okay, so somebody comes online and they bring the Under Armour, a Nike, or an Adidas, you know, a brand shirt, and they, yep, bring it to, and they say, I want you to find me these. I want these decorated.
Sure.
Right? And you feel the material, and they're just like, I don't recognize this from anything that I've bought from many of my wholesalers.
Yeah.
So for one, it's, you know, they can start off by educating the consumer.
Right.
You know, that say, okay, this is how it works.
Yeah.
All right. When they invented this material,
right,
they invented this for this shirt.
In a laboratory.
They're a multi-billion-dollar company, and they, right, produce this shirt just to sell to Target.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
that's how exclusive that shirt is.
Right, yeah, right.
So I can't buy it.
Right.
It's impossible.
Right.
All right. I can get a Nike sport shirt.
Yeah. Or something like
it. Or something,
yeah,
like,
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
You know, but the Nike sports shirt that's like the Nike sports shirt you're handing me is going to be different.
Sure.
Because, yep, Nike made a deal with this.
Right,
you know,
right,
they,
right,
have some exclusivity. Yeah. They put technology. They specifically are trying to sell it blank,
yep,
for $50.
And the other thing to be careful about when talking about, and I think this is a subject matter that, you know, your customers certainly deal with, customer or end user supplied goods, right? My dad and I dealt with that challenge all the time. They'd go to Ross, Marshalls,
yeah,
Target, and bring goods in for embellishment. So I have some insights and thoughts on that subject matter. For your particular example, you know, there's an inherent risk of taking that retail poly, sure, Nike shirt, mm-hmm, and now you're trying to do heat transfer vinyl or screen printer embroider, and it's damaged, it's bleeding like a stuck pig, right? Because it's not using the technology that's in the industry that's preventing, yeah, that. Nike didn't care. They never thought this was going to be on somebody's, you know, basketball team with, you know, white heat transfer vinyl that's now turned, right, pink. Yeah. So there's that risk. The way my dad and I used to manage walk-in, customer-supplied, retail product,
yeah,
was a couple of tactics. And I counseled and coached these tactics through my career as an outside rep because I saw it all too many times. People would come in, take way too much time, bring six dress shirts, say, can you put my logo on there?
Yeah.
They weren't charging enough. They've had an incident with the equipment now, and now they're paying the customer back for a damaged shirt. There, yeah, goes all their margin gone, yeah, right? And again, when I was decorating garments, it was 15, 17 years ago. The industry was a micro fraction of where it's at now with product offerings. You were lucky if you found a ladies' placket that had the buttons going the right way.
Yeah, yeah.
Now we've got plaids and performance pieces, yeah, and there's just as many options in our industry as there almost is at retail.
Yep.
But when they bring it in, a couple of things my dad and I did as deployed strategies was one, and I got on my best legal hat and I typed up a waiver, a simple waiver that just said, you know, acknowledged, yeah, how many pieces they had, how much we were charging them, but also pulled us out of that responsibility. And I would say the same line every time. Taking a needle and I'm punching it at a high velocity through your fabric. Stuff happens.
Right.
If I rip a hole in there or something happens, I'm not going to be responsible for replacing that Lacoste polo or whatever, yeah, they brought in. And two, charge them an inordinate amount of money, right? There's so many times when I see people undervaluing their time,
yeah,
and in this case, their risk.
Yeah.
So now you're going, hey, you thought you got the golden goose because you went to Marshall's, you found this Lacoste polo, originally $100, you bought it for $25.
Right.
Well, I'm going to charge you $10 or $12 for this teeny tiny logo.
Yeah.
Let's combine the numbers together. You're all in for almost $40. Meanwhile, I've got this shirt that I could buy and sell, yeah, and decorate it for $30.
Yeah.
No risk, no hassle driving to the store. So it's something I think customers still battle with. People,
yeah,
walking in, thinking they found a deal, thinking they have a product you can't supply for them. And it's ever more important to educate, take the risk off the table, charge them a lot of money, because you're either going to make that money, yeah, or you're going to convince them that your deal's better than theirs.
Well, one thing that we talk about pretty frequently in the podcast is this idea of having your own menu of approved garments that you've worked with,
yeah,
in the past.
Very smart.
So you know, you've got a selection. And it could be that, you know what, that shirt's going to be a little problematic. Or, you know what, I would feel a lot better if you let me, you know, work with this great shirt.
Sure.
About 100% success with. Or, you know, and here are all the shirts that I can work with.
Yeah.
Which,
yeah,
one of these do you like?
Yeah. And provide value to those,
yeah,
shirts beyond what it is.
Right.
If I do this shirt, here's my legal document you have to sign. And I'll,
right,
I'm telling you, I'll make it look amazing to,
yeah,
the best of my ability. Or if you provide my shirt, this is what you get. Any mistakes are on me.
Yeah.
I will give you a whatever you want to do. On particular shirts, maybe you give them a shrink warranty.
Right.
If it shrinks within 2 weeks of you washing and wearing it, I'll replace you a new one.
Yeah.
Whatever things you want to do. If the apparel falls off, bring it back to me. I'll fix it.
Right.
And you can provide whatever type of warranty or other things.
Assurance. Yeah.
An assurance. If I do yours, the only thing I could say is I could do my best to get it to stick or poke through.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And here's another great offer to make to your customer. It says, okay, so you're wanting a dozen of these Lacoste polos customized. You're wanting a dozen now. Are you ever going to want to do this again?
Right.
Oh, yeah.
In six months, in a year.
Good luck finding just gonna that be regular, at the Marshall's rack.
You're not going to be with fast fashion now.
Yeah.
You're not going to, it's not going to make the next season.
Right.
Let alone when you come back in 6 months. How about we pick something that we are reasonably sure is going to be available.
Tried and true.
Like the ST350, which I'm sure we've got some in this building.
Yeah.
Like these commercially available wholesale blanks that I'm going to have year after year after year.
Sure.
So it's a good pitch.
And this stuff's not easy to pitch that all the time.
Right.
Yeah.
It's not like we're just saying this and everyone's going to say yes.
Right.
It's going to involve you turning away some customers sometimes. It's going to, but the people that you do business with when you do this,
like
you said, they're customers for life. They're going to really refer you.
Right.
Because they're going to say, I went in, I tried to do this. He convinced me to do this.
Yeah.
Like, I'm so much happier whenever I have an issue. Like, one time I had this embroidery, and for some reason I got all crimpled.
Right.
I just brought it in, and the next day, she gave me a new one.
Yeah.
And they're going to tell these stories compared to, I mean, it's nice to tell the story of, if you go to this place, you can get this done for $8.
Right.
But the being the cheapest is not long lasting.
Yeah. When you're a trusted advisor in these instances, and we've certainly referenced a few different cases of relation here, it honestly takes, and I witness this every day. I still occasionally keep in touch with my dad and hear these success stories through him. When you bring in these value added services, when you act as a trusted advisor, whether it's proactive or reactive, it honestly, and I've seen this all the time, it takes price off the table. It really takes price off the table. So in our latest instance of a supplied garment, so you're the third shop. This person has walked in, brought their Lacoste polo, said, hey, how much would you charge to put this logo on? The other two guys just gave her a quote, $8, $10, whatever it was. You're the one guy that stopped, had thoughtful questions and insights, shared this reality. Again, like you said, I can do it, but here's the risk and liability involved. Or did you know? You know, how many times we say, did you know? These people have no earthly idea about our industry, the access of product. I can't tell you how many times I saw somebody that was about to sell a Sport Tech polo with a logo for $27. And then all of a sudden they're like, I could do a Nike polo or a retail brand polo for only about $8 or $10 more. And they're like, I didn't even know that was an option, much less the price gap. Well, they just sort of, whether they realized it or not, unintentionally upsold.
Yep.
And brought that trusted advisor value to them. And the two other guys that they just talked to didn't mention that at all.
Yep.
They just went, all right, so Sport Tech polo $27.
So the answer to can you embroider these five Lacoste polos with my logo on the other side, the answer is definitely yes.
Sure.
You're going to love this polo that I can give you instead.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. It's not no.
Right.
It's yes. Yeah. Look at this one.
And another great value behind it is like this rack behind us right here is that, so, and I know Sanmar does a great job of this. You've got certain lines of apparel that all come in these color spectrums.
Matching.
Yeah. So you can get the shorts and you can get the shirt with the stripe that's got the shorts with the line.
Yep.
That's got the back. I don't know. You know, all the different things, all the different parts and pieces to it. So when you're getting ready to, you find this one off one, or they buy something from Target, or they're bringing you something from the Under Armour store.
Sure.
You're not going to be able to do all of that.
Right.
So you can coordinate your upsells, and then immediately you turn. I can also do this shirt. By the way, it'll be cheaper. Also, like check out, and you turn the page over to your Sanmar catalog where it's got like 15 things that are all have the same color chart.
Correct.
And then all of a sudden the customer, when you look at that and they say, yeah, our team would love this.
Yeah.
Or we can't afford that now.
Right.
But
right.
next time we're going to get those pieces.
Listen for the words, I had no idea.
Yeah. Right?
That's when you know you had an aha moment with your customer. And again, you're providing that value and you're going to have a customer for a longer residual. And I mean it when I say price comes off the table because, you know, they start to value you for just writing that order up. Versus, you know, the ultimate goal, which is to say, this guy shared insights with me, asked me questions nobody else bothered to do, revealed some options for me, gave me that good, better, best strategy, like you said, and package it all together, and that's somebody who's got my business forever.
And cool. It's everywhere you look. What's the most popular car?
Sure.
What's the most popular phone?
Right.
We know what's, if you just look up the most popular and look it up, it's oftentimes, it's a brand of something that took all of these concepts into it. You know, like iPhone, most popular phone. Why? Yep. They kept going to customers. Well, you want your thumb to be able to reach the corner.
Sure.
So we can build in this function. And they kept doing that. And like, you know, I have a Camry. One of the most popular cars out there, and it's all these little form and functions they built in, and they're not custom building cars like we're custom building garments.
Right.
But what they're doing is they're taking the knowledge of a whole and putting it out there, and they're turning it into it.
Sure.
So if you want to be the most popular shop in your area, and you want that repeat business consistently, like Apple gets and all these other folks get, is you have to provide that value. You just get the benefit of doing it for every customer individually, which is really cool.
I like that a lot. Well, I mean, it feels like we've been talking for like 2 hours.
Yeah, we've been talking for 59 minutes.
Okay, so that's about perfect. That's about perfect then, because I think we could do this all day.
Sure,
Is there, before we wrap up, and we'll put links in the notes.
Sure.
To Sanmar University.
Yep.
Where can people kind of engage with you as the Apparel Geek?
Yeah, so, apparelgeek.com is probably the easy starting point.
Okay.
I do have a basic WordPress site. Don't judge me on it. It doesn't get updated.
I'm absolutely going to judge
you.
Yeah,
please.
You're going to be judged.
But I think it's easier than naming off all the different social media portals. If you're on Twitter, that's easy enough, at Apparel Geek. If you're on Instagram, long story short, I had to sacrifice and go with Apparel Nerd. But
why didn't you do Real Apparel Geek?
I've had so many people say,
that's what you got to do, Real. That's
apparel,
the cool thing.
Apparel underscore geek or dot geek.
No, I'm changing mine. Yeah. I'm changing mine to Real.
The real Apparel Geek.
Yeah.
But if you go to apparelgeek.com, you'll see kind of my some basic housed information. I do post probably once a quarter on there. You know, something beyond the social media link stuff, whether it's a new Sanmar launch or something I, A, have the time to, and B, feel passionately about. I do have some decent content on there. But look at me for apparelgeek.com and on sanmar.com. It's a little hard to find, but under our resources tab, decorator relations. Again, most of what we talked about today, whether it's sourcing equipment, finding solutions for challenges, sourcing contract decorators, are all things that our team is owning. And then, as you mentioned earlier, Sanmar University, great content there for education.
Yeah, and also if you go to any of the apparel decorating trade shows, Sanmar is always there.
Sure.
Most of the time, Monty is there.
Yeah.
Just walk right up to him and ask him why Cold Essie is so awesome.
There you go.
And if you come to our showroom, you're going to see tons of Sanmar apparel as well. Yeah. I have a question I didn't ask, though, so maybe we can finish one last question.
All right. Okay. Short, it's the big one.
It's the big one.
Uh-oh.
How do you recommend people listening to this communicate wash instructions, because that's a big deal, or is it a big deal?
It is a big deal, and this is a good, interesting subject. It's one I thought about writing a content piece on. Wash instructions are very tricky. I think what I can encapsulate this answer in is with performance fabrics.
Okay.
I was probably about 6 or 7 years ago, I was doing a project product training, as I did with my customers twice a year, and we were talking about performance polyester polos. And inevitably, going through the cycles, you'll hear occasional comments about, oh, I don't sell those darn poly shirts because they smell bad. You know, that would be something that would occasionally come up. Well, it would be easy enough for me to just go, oh, yeah, I feel ya. Sorry. Don't know what the answer is there. If you look at inside of every performance garment, I've got a performance woven on right now, you'll see on the care instructions several keywords. Do not use fabric softeners. You know, you referenced that earlier in decoration techniques.
They're a nightmare.
They're not designed or intended for synthetic fabrics. So gone are the days, and this might be information for you all, of doing your laundry in lights and darks. That's really not how you're supposed to wash clothes anymore. It was back in the day when everything was cotton, maybe a blend.
Yeah.
You didn't want to get, you know, your dark burgundy shirts to maybe have some dye carry over to your white shirts. But what you have to do now with your laundry is synthetics and naturals is what I would call it. So here's all my cotton stuff. Here's my nice dress pants, maybe my khakis. But then here's my performance polos, my wife's yoga pants. I mean, if you start to really look at your laundry load like that, you're like, gosh, I do have enough stuff now to make a separate load. And the naturals should get fabric softeners because those materials are designed to keep the fabric soft and, let's face it, smell good.
Yeah.
But when you try to apply fabric softeners to performance fabrics, they actually get stuck embedded into the yarns, into the pores. That prevents the breathability of the garment. And then you do have, if you're wearing it against your skin, you're going to probably have some sweat that incurs. You're going to get bacteria there. It's going to build up. Rinse, cycle, repeat. Yeah. Rinse, cycle, repeat. Now you got a stinky shirt that doesn't breathe very well.
Yeah.
And it's put a bad rap on performance shirts until they start to change their perspective on separating your loads.
That's great.
And there's just so many different things that I just find to be interesting about that wash instructions. And then can Sanmar help with some information if they buy apparel from you to maybe get some recommendations on recommending on how to wash it? Or
I mean, I think most of our customer service team will have some insights there.
Okay.
You can certainly come to me directly on some things, but I think if you ask most of the folks that are answering the phones at Sanmar, they'll at the very least be able to kind of reaffirm what that content is, discuss a few of the basic parameters about what should or shouldn't be done with a wash and upkeep. But it is a good question. We see that failure, and it hurts both our companies because they think the shirt's at fault. They think the material's at fault.
Yeah.
It really just came down to somebody who was cooking their stuff in the dryer, you know, the materials cracking, shirts shrinking, and ultimately it came down to the user's wash instructions.
Yeah, no, so it's good. Well, great. Well, I'm glad we're able to finish off. That was something I just found to be just important.
It's a good question.
And I just run into it so much because I've got shirts that I've washed. I've got digital white transfer white toner transfer shirts that I make for my daughter.
Sure.
And there's one that I made September last year. It's just a big picture of a kitten. It's in some of our videos that we've done. And that's her favorite shirt. And she's worn it. She wears it. I mean, every single time it can be worn.
Right.
It's worn, and then it's washed within a week. And so and it looks still awesome. I don't know how many washes are in it. You know, I mean, 20, 30.
Right.
It's not cracked. It's not broken apart. It's not peeled. So then when folks get on there and they talk about washability on types of apparel, then and it's true of heat transfer vinyl and DTG.
Yeah,
it doesn't
matter.
Yeah. Right? That they really this stuff doesn't wash
right
and I'm just like, it does wash
if you read the instructions.
If you read the instructions, what are you doing? And if you don't know the instructions, maybe you've got to do a little testing yourself as a business owner.
Very
and
good.
Make your own wash instructions for your apparel and the catalog that you approve. Give them instructions and tell your customers, this is important.
Yep,
I'm putting it in here. If you come back and it's damaged, I'm going to know why.
Right. Yeah, right.
So anyway, that's the end, I think, for me.
Okay. That was good. All right. So thank you, Monty Mims.
Thank you, guys. Thank you.
Awesome. For coming by. We really appreciate that. You are going to see all the places that you can get in touch with Monty in the show notes today.
Sure.
And if you feel like this was a great podcast, which honestly you should because it was a great podcast.
Yeah.
if you feel like that, if you're watching us on YouTube, please share it. If you are consuming this on a podcast service like iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you're doing that, you know, please give us a review. We would really appreciate that. Share it with your friends.
Hit the subscribe button, right?
Hit the subscribe button.
Yeah, subscribe. You know, hit the notification bell, on YouTube is another one now. And then further from that, if you feel like you learned something and you got some action things, that's one of the ways you can pay us back. You know, of course, like buying from our companies, all that's awesome.
Yes.
But a very simple way that's free to pay us back is share to Facebook, share it on Twitter, whatever you want, like it, thumbs up it, subscribe, and all those things really help us out. It helps other people out. So do that. That'd be awesome. Cool. And it's free.
Yeah. All right. Thanks again. This has been Mark Stevenson from Coldesi.
And Mark Vila from Coleman & Company.
You guys have a good business.